All right, good morning, everybody. So this morning, Corey, I know Corey the best. Corey and I worked together at Wooddale for a couple years, and during, you know, the thousands of tables we set up together and the millions of chairs we stacked, we talked a lot. And of course, you're working at a church, so you get to talk about God a lot, which is awesome. And so when Corey was like, yeah, I want to go do missions work in Thailand, I was like, sure, sounds like a great plan. And so they've been able to start working. They're working with Converge, which is the old, which is the new name for, is it General Association, right? Baptist General. So in case you have heard of that and not their new name. So they're here to present what they're hoping to accomplish. And if God lays it on your heart to, I'll tell you this, God is laying it on your heart to pray for them. But if God lays it on your heart to support them, you can talk with them about how to do that. I think everyone here right now is aware, like, as a church, that's the mission support structure that we try to do, is we try and give you access to all sorts of different missions and allow you to directly support and build a relationship with people who live on the other side of the world that you support. And we think that we can do a better job of supporting missionaries that way than the typical way of having to have, like, five business meetings about which missionary we're going to support at which rate and having to have all that going on. So keep in mind that I know that our family is thinking to add a missionary this year to our budget. So as God prospers you, if you are able to do that. Also, if you're interested in any section of missions that, like, we haven't had somebody, like, if you're interested in medical missions, let me know right now, but I'm going to be passing it off to outreach team. And outreach team can start looking for people because we don't have to wait for everybody to come to us. So if you ever have something you want to hear about, you let us know and we'll try and find somebody. But without further ado, I'll have Corey and, oh no, Brooke. I almost lost the name. I was like, I know their kid's name, but Corey and Brooke to come present their mission, their ministry that they're planning to do in Thailand. So thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Corey.
I'm Brooke. Surprise, surprise. we're really thankful to be here this morning and just be able to share the ministry that God has put on our hearts. It's been a process. It still is a process, and it's part of how God is growing us. A big thing that we like to just talk about before we even go into our presentation is that, you know, we are asking that you would listen with open hearts and allow the Holy Spirit to move you as you pray about it and think about what it might look like to partner with you. We'll share what that looks like, different ways to partner, or share our financial needs, but this is by no means a pressure-filled presentation. We really want you to get a good picture of where we're coming from, what our ministry is about, and how God is leading us, and how he might lead you to partner with us. So, yeah.
Cool. We need to update our family picture. As you can see, there's one more with us. Lucette was born. We have Delphine's our oldest. She's 4. Giselle is 2. And Lucette was born January 1st. So we like to joke that she heard about 2020 and wanted nothing to do with it. So she waited till the first day of the year. But that's the family. Just to kind of give you a little background on us, too. This is me. I grew up in Maple Grove, kind of the northwest suburbs up there. And we went to an evangelical free church growing up. I think it's funny, God has a sense of humor, because it was actually during one of those sermons where I saw the adults partaking in, you know, what I thought were juice and crackers, and I thought, why don't I get some too? And so when I asked my mom about, you know, why I didn't get munchies and everyone else did, she told me about what it meant to have a relationship with Jesus. And so I look at my journey starting at about 5 years old. So very involved in church. It was a really good place to learn how to serve. That was me. They called me the human jungle gym, hanging out with the 4 and 5 year olds there. Did that from 7th grade to 12th grade. And just a really good place too to find mentors, to find people who can show you as a young person that living for Christ is worth it. And it is worth it until, you know, the end of your life. And so that's my youth pastor there, Ryan, who I had the honor, he baptized me in my Batman shirt. I guess when you're 14, yeah. We like to kind of have some back and forth during our presentations. I know a lot of us might have had, you know, a mentor figure growing up, whether it was a coach, Sunday school teacher. Anyone have a mentor that they had growing up that God used to impact their life? Just want to shout it out. Yeah? Youth pastors. Mm-hmm. It's just those formative years. It's like you need something there, mm-hmm. you know? Wow. Cool to hear God's grace with you guys. Yeah, and so Ryan, my youth pastor, was that person for me. Another thing that happened during that time, I feel like was very foundational, was that I had a choir director who was just very intentional with us as 10th graders, just coming in as just these squirrely 10th graders, and he transformed us into this just amazing choir. His name was Mr. Goldenstein, in his 30s, single guy, just very happy. And long story short, he ended up taking his life, which as a high schooler, it wrecked our choir, you know, and especially me too. I'd never really known grief like that until that point. And just trying to figure out how you follow Christ during grief during that time. I think I just kind of looked at it as like a good Christian claims victory. I just got to move on. And as we all know, that doesn't work when things like that happen, where the ground just falls out from underneath you. And really lucky I had that support system. Youth pastor and parents did lead me back to the Bible and prayer. And I guess what I discovered during that time is that God is a God who doesn't waste pain. He doesn't want you to run away from the pain. He wants to create a foundation out of it. And so seeing God as a healer during that time, I feel like really gave me a vision for what he wanted to accomplish in my life and hopefully use me in the lives of others as well. So after that, I got to go forward instead of backward. I went to Crown College for a couple years. I started out as a music ed major. I switched to youth ministry. I ended up having some jobs in camp ministry, Camp Chaminade. I don't know if you've heard of that before. They have a camp up in the Boundary Waters called Rock Ridge, and they were actually thinking about selling it potentially. And so a couple of us guys in our 20s, we served as interim camp director and kind of got it back up into shape. I led trips out into the wilderness, and that was really fun to develop. God developed my leadership capabilities through that, and it was just a really good time to see how God was going to use me to teach others as the years went on. And after that, I served as a youth director at a church in Chaska for 2 years. 2 Corinthians 5:20 talks about how we've been given this ministry of reconciliation, that we're ambassadors for Christ, so therefore be reconciled to God. And I look at my story as that. I really can't take credit for anything, but really see how God wants to use me as an ambassador. And hopefully it's through his story, or through my story, that God can show his greater story. And so here is my wife. She's going to talk a little bit about her.
So similar to Corey, I grew up in a Christian home as well, and my parents really loved the Lord, and I was one of 8 kids, the second oldest, but the oldest girl, so I mean, I was sort of like the oldest. My family was known for being one of the biggest families around, and I remember we used to sing together, and we all played a different instrument, and so we became known as the Von Trapps of Forest City, Iowa, which when you're 14 is kind of like, ooh, a little bit cringy, but just briefly, shout out something that your family was known for. Very good. Yeah, so our family, yeah, we were known for being the big singing family that went to the Baptist Church on the Hill, and I was a very good little Christian girl. I loved going to church. It was one of my favorite places to be, and I remember being very seen and loved by the adults, not just the ones that taught my Sunday school class or VBS, but just any adult I could come up to and share something really trivial, and they would give me the time of day. And I remember feeling the love of Christ through my church family. And that is what I truly think piqued my interest in becoming a part of God's family from a young age. So like Corey, I was about 5 when I asked my mom, what did it mean to become part of God's family? And she shared with me what Christ had done. And I accepted his gift of forgiveness for my sins and was really excited to share that with everybody. I remember I made my mom drive to the church, and we went in and told the pastor and stuff, and I was just so proud. But it wasn't always easy for me. And my life verse is Psalm 39:7. And now, Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. So kind of briefly talking about going through those teen years, like Corey said, they're really tough years. And I remember really struggling with questions of like, is God really real? Are all these things I grew up with true? Do I have just my parents' faith? And did I really understand what it meant to be God's child when I was 5? Did I say the right words when I prayed? Like all of those really like deep questions that you ask yourself. And I think when I was questioning that, I felt like I was kind of a fake Christian because I was asking those questions. And so I became very depressed and my parents were really worried about me. And I had a lot of counsel in my life during that time through my parents. But I really wouldn't let anyone else in until college. And that's when I had an older woman mentor me. And she basically took me back to scripture and walked through all of my fears with me and just said, hey, like, this is what the word of God says. And you say you believe it, but you keep going back to these fears and just clinging on to them. And so, like, basically what you're doing is calling God a liar. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that. And it really did open my eyes to the fact that, like, what Jesus did for me was enough. And I could just rest in his grace. Like, there was no special prayer I had to pray or, you know, I didn't have to serve a certain number of days in the church or in all these different programs. Like, it was enough what Jesus did for me. And that really freed me then to opportunities that God had laid out before me. It was really cool. So that was my first opportunity after my freshman year of college, was to go to Japan on a short-term mission trip. And it's funny because up to that point, I had actually applied for a different mission trip when I was in high school and the door was closed. And so when God opened this door, I was exposed to my first culture that didn't have Judeo-Christian background to it. And just seeing how intertwined Buddhism was in Japanese culture just blew my mind. So one of the ways that they showed us this was they took us to the giant Buddha, and you walk up to the statue, you see people, you know, bringing fruit and flowers and teaching their kids how to pray. And then you walk around the backside of the statue and there's a door, and you can pay like a couple hundred yen to go inside. But if you just peek around the corner, I noticed, oh, it's empty and hollow inside. There's like nothing to look at in there. It's just this big hollow statue. And it just struck me of, this is a picture of what religion is without Jesus. It's just hollow, empty, vain. And that kind of, you know, hung around in my mind. And then we were at a college campus a few days later, and I had a girl come up to us. We were just kind of practicing conversational English with students, and this girl came up to me and she said, so why are all of you Americans here in Japan? And being able to share with her my story of like, this is what God did in my life. Here's the hope that he gave me. And realizing that, you know, when I asked her if she had ever heard of Jesus, the answer was no. And I remember when I sat on the bus on the way back that day, I thought, there's nothing that would be worth more of my life than telling other people about Jesus that I've never heard. And so that's when God really laid on my heart Unreached People Groups. So I went back 2 more times to Japan. I really loved it there. Had a lot of opportunities to use teaching English as a tool to reach people. But I found out that I was not equipped for long-term missions yet. I needed more training, and God led me back to the States. I had a 2-year degree up to that point in missions and Bible, and then I finished out a relational communication degree at Bethel University in St. Paul. And this was a really important time in my life for opening up to other women and having mentoring relationships. Growing up with 5 brothers, I was really good at relating to guys, but girls, I was like, oh, I think I'll just, you know, play it safe here. And God really challenged me in that area, and I was able to form some really rich friendships and find out what it meant to be vulnerable and grow in my faith with other women. And then I also studied abroad in 11 different countries in Europe during that time and took a short-term mission trip to Nicaragua as well. And all those experiences were really formative in teaching me the importance of language acquisition to get to the heart of a culture. It was really hard for me to learn German and put my heart into it, but I realized how much it held me back in not knowing how to speak to people in their heart language. So that, and then just God used my time at Bethel to bring Corey into my life, and that was a big part of the next steps that God wanted me to take.
So we met back in the spring of 2013, and God led us together through eHarmony. That's how we met. And it was just kind of funny because we had been on other dates. We'd met other people. So that first date was very much like, okay, are you into this? Deep question, theology, this, that. It just, from the very beginning, it was very, very purpose-driven. And so one date turned into many dates, which turned into me proposing and us getting married in October of 2014, mm-hmm. October 11, 2014. And we had our pastor share James 1, 2 through 4. And that's, count it joy, my brothers, when you face trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. We really wanted the theme of our wedding to be, when you take those steps of faith, how does God bless them? And also when you falter, how does God teach you through that mm-hmm. as well? And so that was really tested because a month after we were married, I lost my job at the church that we were at. And I'd been there for 2 years. It's something that we really thought was going to be our home. It was really tough. And during that time, I was also working part-time at a coffee shop. And one of the regulars heard what happened, and he said, hey, well, why don't you come to my church this Sunday? And so the Sunday after everything happened, we were in a church. We both really don't remember a lot about it because it was very emotional. But we remember standing there in the pews and just thinking to ourselves, okay, God, something happened with a church, but there's still the church. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you have planned for us? Where are we going now?
Right.
While we were dating, I knew that missions was going to be in our future somehow. Like, I saw how it was on Brooke's heart that just, you know, she even cried one time on a date as she talked about least reach peoples. And so I thought, okay, maybe we'll do some short-term missions, you know, as I'm a youth director. But God made it very clear after everything happened that he's leading us into full-time missions ministry. Mm-hmm. Doors started opening, and we found a church plan that was just so loving and just really healing after that whole time with my church, that when they heard that we were even remotely interested in missions, they said, okay, you're going down to Orlando. You're going to be assessed by Converge, and we'll see where God takes this. We're like, okay, let's see what happens.
So Converge, like Caleb was saying, it used to be Baptist General Conference, so it's an more established denomination. It's over 165 years old. And let's see if I can get this right. They have 79, they have missionaries in 79 countries. Nope, that's wrong. It's 39 countries. And it's 179 missionaries. There we go. The reason why we are so excited about Converge is they are focused on reaching unreached people groups. And this is what we believe is part of finishing the task of the Great Commission. So their tagline is, they want to see a gospel movement in every least reached people group in our generation. And they want to partner with other ministries to make sure that happens. So it's not just like, this is Converge, this is what we're doing. They're saying, no, let's see how we can partner with what other ministries are already doing and make sure that we're being the most effective possible. And Corey and I were really excited about that. So, yeah, that's Converge.
So we were assessed at the Orlando facility. It was a team of about 12 missionaries who had just been doing it for decades, and we were approved with Converge, and it was just, we were kind of over the moon. It was really exciting. When we came back to Minnesota, mm-hmm. our pastor surprised us even more. He said, hey, have you guys ever thought about teaching English in East Asia? We're like, that's kind of weird. That's exactly the region we were thinking about going to. He said, we're going to send you to Bangkok to support one of our missionaries who has an English teaching ministry there. And so, it was amazing. I mean, we had a daughter, and it was kind of funny because people are like, are you bringing your daughter with you? Yeah, she's 9 months old. What else are we going to do with her? You know?
Just leave her home yeah. for the summer.
Yeah, send her off to some boarding school or something. No. So we packed her up, and so that's our four-year-old, our oldest daughter. She's 9 months then, and the ministry was we taught English during the day, and then at night we just asked our students, what do you love about your country? Show us your country. And they would bring us just all over the place. And hopefully during that time, the goal was to create gospel conversations. And there was one student, she's up there, her nickname is Bonus. Thai names are very hard. It's a tonal language. It's very hard for Americans to pronounce. So her nickname was Bonus. And she just brought us everywhere. I mean, we rode elephants. We went to these night markets where you just walk past rows and rows of this just delicious street food that you didn't even have to eat as much, just the smells and the sights and all. And it was at one of these night markets that we started talking about Jesus with her. And, you know, we shared that Jesus said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." In our mind, it's like, okay, that's pretty clear. Jesus is saying he's the only way. Mm-hmm. And she thought about it, and she said, okay, but, you know, I still have my Buddhism, so I can serve Buddhism, and I can serve your God too, right? And we just realized that it's not going to be a one conversation thing or a multiple. I mean, if we really want to affect the Thai people and bring the gospel into their country, then we need to be ready to give our whole lives to it. So by the end of that time, one of those things where we didn't really feel special by any means, but we felt called. Mm-hmm. We said, okay, God, we're going to pursue this calling and see where it leads to Thailand.
Mm-hmm. So, Thailand. What do you guys know about Thailand, or what do you think of when you think of Thailand? Yes, so all of those things are very accurate. We had to kind of give ourselves a refresher, but Thailand is a small country in Southeast Asia, a little bit bigger than the state of California, but smaller than Texas. So not very big. And in that space of land, there are over 69 million people. So it's pretty packed. Now, 10% of that population lives in Bangkok or the greater Bangkok area. So Bangkok itself is a sprawling city. And that's where we spent the majority of our time in ministry when we were there over the summer. It's a constitutional monarchy, and they're very proud of the fact that they've never been colonized by a Western nation, so they're very Thai. And if you were to say anything against the king or his policies or his family or anything related to the way that he hands down laws or anything, you could be thrown into prison for up to 15 years, even as a tourist. Yes. Yeah, they play the anthem, and you stand up and give your respect to the king. That's a very good memory, yeah. So tourism is a big part of Thai culture because it's such a cheap place to travel, and they have some of the most pristine beaches in the world. There are over 1,400 islands in the south part of Thailand. There is a huge influx of tourism. Millions of people visit Thailand. Obviously, that's changed since COVID, but it's the second largest industry there. So they have a lot of people from lots of different parts of the world. And in that space of land also, you can see the effects of Buddhism on the country. There are 35,000 Buddhist temples, and it's just really a part of Thai culture. It's woven into who they are as people, into their cultural identity. And Corey will share a little bit more about that later, but that's just like a little picture of Thailand. So when we came back from our time in Bangkok, we were just really struggling with thinking about doing ministry in Bangkok in general. The teaching English, we saw it was a good ministry, but we didn't know how well we fit with it. And we were just praying and talking through our concerns and our thoughts and talking with Converge leadership. And they said, well, we have a work starting in Northern Thailand in an agricultural community, which is the kind of community that I'm from. Yeah. And that immediately piqued our interest. And as we started researching it and praying about it, it was really cool to see all the ways that God was preparing the way before us. So this is a bird's eye view of the city of Udon Thani. So you have Udon Thani, the province, and then Udon Thani city. And this city is about an hour south of the border of Laos. So it's about a 6-hour car ride north of Bangkok, which is down by the coast. And Udon Thani was a U.S. military base during the Vietnam War, so it's considered an international community, and they've really tried to foster that sense of community through, they built several international schools, one of which was just finished last August. They have multiple universities. They're building a train line that will go from Bangkok in the south to Laos in the north, and Udon Thani will be one of the stops, and I think they're just really trying to continue to grow the city and bring people in because it is so disconnected from all that's happening in the south in Bangkok, and it is also pretty far from Chiang Mai as well, which is another big city. But we see it as a pivotal place for, if you have all these countries that are a part of the culture in Udon Thani, how cool that the gospel could take a stronghold there and go out to these other areas that are so close, like Laos, Cambodia, Myanmar, all of these places that are also considered unreached by the gospel. So we see it as a really awesome place to start ministry. So we've talked a little bit about our experience in Thailand, a little bit about just the country in general, but Corey's going to share more about the spiritual climate and what that's like.
So we know that we serve a God who has a plan that's greater than anything we can imagine, and that's redeeming his creation back to himself. And we know with this unfathomable love that there's an enemy working as hard as he can to work against that. And we know that Satan has done, you know, especially this past year, quite a job of working within our culture in America. What are some ways that you have seen Satan working in our culture? Mm-hmm. I think all those things, yeah. Well, it's like we're supposed to be the salt and the light of the earth as well, but it's almost like we've lost our saltiness in some regards. But it's I think what Satan does too is that he works himself into just our lenses and the culture in order that we don't even really see what he's doing all the time either. And that he's a distractor, mm-hmm. Yeah.
100%.
And that is what he's doing in Thailand, and he's doing that through Buddhism. So Buddhism, like Brooke said, it is the over 98%. And so, I mean, it is something where if you are born into the culture, you're born Buddhist. And they go by the teachings of someone who they believe, lived in a kingdom, that he was a prince, that he lived in opulence. And when he left the kingdom and he saw suffering among the people, that's when he found this new enlightenment, how to, you know, serve the people around you, how to live a good life, a good moral life. And so that's what these people, they dedicate their lives to do, good works, you know, follow the Buddhist tenets. And another big part of that, too, is appeasing the spiritual realm. And that's something we don't see as much with Satan in America. I think he's figured out other ways to distract us. But there, the spiritual realm is just everywhere. You walk down a block and you'll see a little shrine where you can go and leave anything from, you know, offerings to gifts to even like red pop. They believe the ghosts, like red pops, lots of Fanta around. It was really interesting. And this is especially important for them because they believe in the afterlife. So they believe in reincarnation. So if you follow Buddhist tenets, if you appease the spirits around you, then you can be born, hopefully, into a higher form in the afterlife. Mm-hmm. And this is so just contrary to what Christianity teaches as well, because we don't believe that we have to fear the spirits around us, our creation. We've been given dominion over the earth. There's creator and there's created. But in their mind, they don't have that. And so they see this creation as something that, how do you ever know if you've appeased enough? You know, it breeds fear. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's the woman we're partnering with actually has experienced firsthand. Mm-hmm. She was born Thai, and we'll show you her in a little bit, but she was born Thai. She's a dentist in America now, but no one knew Thai or Buddhism better than her in high school. And she said that just the more she got into it, the more fear she felt, to the point where, like, one day she swatted a mosquito, and she wasn't supposed to kill. And so she's, you know, the monks taught her not to kill. What am I supposed to do? You know, am I going to be a mosquito now in my next life? I mean, it sounds almost kind of funny, but it was just something where she couldn't have any interaction without fear. But as God does, you know, he extends his hand of grace and mercy, and he sent a missionary to her. Mm-hmm. And after many attempts, but Jesus finally broke through to her. And she said on that day, she felt like she was physically lighter, like the chains had fallen off. It's just really cool to hear her talk about it. I mean, that's just a beautiful picture of what we want the Thai people to find. We want them to find that freedom from these chains of fear. And it really is a fear that starts at an early age. Even young children can be enlisted as temporary monks in order that if something happens, bad happens in their family, they can hopefully reflect well upon their family. And so it really is a kind of a form of indoctrination from when they're young. Some other trickle-down effects of Buddhism as well, that only the gospel could come and heal in the country. as many of you probably know, the sex industry is on a scale that is just hard to fathom there. Just thousands, if not, you know, millions of people being oppressed through the system. That we were waiting for a bus with our little daughter one time at a KFC. It's a big restaurant over there. And we were a block away from one of the biggest red light districts in Bangkok. We had no idea. It's just very out there. And also poverty is another thing. We'd go into these villages and we would see, you know, just the all these possibilities for infrastructure and business. And we'd wonder, well, where's all this time, energy, and resources going to? And we'd see in the middle of these villages just these huge, you know, higher than anything else, these temples that were just, you know, golden and ornate. And just a picture of people giving all that they have into something that will never give them the hope that they need, and to their detriment of poverty. John 10:10 says, "The thief has come to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come to give life abundant." And we definitely see Satan doing his best over there to try to steal, kill, and destroy. But as God does, he gives us ways to fight against the darkness, and he has opened doors in order for us to partner with people in Thailand in order that Satan's work can be diminished.
So last January, we were given the opportunity to go back to Thailand and visit for a short couple-week trip just to see what the area was like where we wanted to minister. And it was really interesting because a missionary couple we had met on our previous trip invited us to first come to the rural parts of Thailand up in the mountains. And we thought, well, we're in Thailand, like we've never been to Udon Thani before, so why not be open to another area as well? And this area was called Uttaradit. And so the first part of our trip, we went to Uttaradit in the mountains, and we got to visit remote villages where there were one or two believers just isolated by themselves. They didn't have a church, but they would ask us, like, will you come back and, like, host a sports camp in our community, or come and teach English in our schools, or start a church, or be, you know, do a Bible study, like just being a part of their community. And they really, you could see their heart for their friends and neighbors to know Jesus the way that they did. And it really touched us. And we were, before we went, we're like, oh, we're pretty set on Udon Thani, but that really tugged on our heartstrings. But then we got to Udon Thani and seeing the ways that God had already placed these ministry connections there through Dr. G, the woman Corey was telling you about, it really just showed us that God is in preparing the way before us for a multiplication movement instead of adding a church one by one by one. So this is a picture of Corey preaching at a Baptist church that's in Udon Thani. It's a pastor who had been there for over 30 years ministering. He was just about to retire, but he and his staff took the entire week off to show us around the city, to talk about different schooling options for our kids, show us housing, tell us the history of the city, answer any questions about Thai culture and what it means to be a Thai person coming to know Christ for the first time and all the barriers and challenges that they face. And just having their input was priceless. We gained so much insight during that week. And when we parted, they said, you know, if God calls you back to Udon Thani, we want to come alongside you and help you acclimate. And knowing that we have a partnership with a Thai church is a big thing for us because we want to empower the Thai believers to reach their own and not bring in our Western viewpoint and our Western way of doing things and say, here you go. So this is a big partnership for us. And then this is one of the church members, O, and his wife. O is obviously his nickname. And their little daughter. And their family owns a coffee shop cafe where they use the top part of the building to teach English classes to elementary school children. And the bottom half, the parents can visit and, you know, hang out in the cafe. And it's open to the public. And just his creativity and love for the Lord was so inspiring. And we had so many fun conversations with him. And it was great to get to know him. And one of the things we took away from our conversation with him was he said, you know, I don't really want anything big for my life, nothing extraordinary. I just want my daughter to know who Jesus is and have Christian friends. And those are good desires, right? But he lives in a culture that's less than 1% evangelical Christian. And so seeing the need for discipleship that, I mean, we all need that. We all need someone who will disciple us. And so seeing the need for discipleship in a culture that's very Buddhist and very secular, just really, it opened our eyes. And then you'll see there a woman in kind of a pinkish shirt in the middle there, an older woman. That is Dr. Jeed, and she is our main contact, high contact in Udon Thani. She's the one that is in connection with the Baptist Church. She introduced us to some people in crew leadership that are in the area hoping to start ministry up there, which is Campus Outreach, I think is what it used to be called. Yeah, Campus Crusade. And then this is a picture of us at the agricultural college. So we were able to visit there and talk with the dean of students, and they would like to start an conversational English ministry, not a ministry, English class there on their campus. They are a secular university, so it's a big open door for us to have kind of a way to connect in the community and add good or add value. And we also talked about the possibility of starting a study abroad program where students from the university could come to the States, stay in a community like this one with a family, learn more conversational English by living with them, learn more about agriculture, and then take those skills back with them. But the main goal for us would be for them to see what it's like for believers living out their day-to-day life. So that is another possibility. But the biggest thing that we're hoping to focus on in our work in Udon Thani is Dr. Jeed has donated a piece of land right across from the college where she'd like to build a discipleship and training center. So like we talked about, that need for discipleship and training within the church so that the Thai believers can be sent out to the rural areas where those people are asking for churches to come and be planted.
The way the pastor described it to us is that, well, number one, we're on an educational visa. I think they do have religious visas, but they don't really hand them out. So we'd be on an educational visa. And the pastor told us that back during, you ever seen that musical, The King and I? Back when it was Siam. Back during that time, Christians really built up a lot of good faith with the country.
Yeah.
Through humanitarian work, through teaching, nursing, and all that. And so since then, they are, yeah, Christians are not persecuted in the country. So on a regular basis, yeah, we can work with them. And in Bangkok, they're even pretty, not mega churches, but there are some churches that are pretty large.
Some larger ones.
Yeah, and so it's really not something where we are, yeah, Christianity is not being persecuted.
Yeah. It's a lot different. We did visit Malaysia on our first trip to Thailand, like at the end of our trip, and the climate there was like, you don't share that you're a Christian or you might disappear. Like, people told us that. And that's just very different than Thailand. I think the type of persecution that a Thai believer would face would be more within their familial context, friendships, just being ostracized and really looked as if, you know, like they're very much like a collective culture. And so they view that as kind of like you're betraying or you're making us lose face by going to Christianity because that's not who we are as Thai or Buddhist. So that's more of the type of persecution you would see in Thailand. But yeah, so just some really cool things happening. And like we were talking about with the Baptist Church, with the Discipleship and Training Center, it wouldn't just be us and our teammates coming in and bringing a Western viewpoint in everything. We really want to partner with the Thai Church to make sure that they're being trained in how to train their own to be sent out and see the multiplication movement of the gospel go across the country and hopefully to these other countries as well. And it sounds like a huge dream, and it is a huge dream because we serve an amazing God who can do it. And we're excited about all the ways that he's preparing us, pruning us to be a part of the ministry.
And Crew is really focused on church planting. And so we see that partnership as, okay, so they want to plant churches and we want to train lay people. Mm-hmm. There's just so much that can be done with that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people wonder what that pie chart didn't really translate well. So a lot of people wonder what a missionary's budget looks like, and this is what ours is. So the green right there is our take home. That's what we have. It's about 30% there. The orange is our living expenses. That's everything from our housing to insurance to our girls' education. Mm-hmm. The red and the purple there, that is kind of what our pie chart looks like there, is our retirement and social security contributions. Mm-hmm. The blue is our ministry expenses. So that'd be our work funds, our visas. If we needed to go home for any reason, we wouldn't have to go into debt for that. And the gray is the portion that Converge takes, and that's the ministry administration expenses. So they do a lot with just making sure the funds get where they need to, IT work, missionary care. They're very big on missionary care, family care. And so that is the portion they take. Mm-hmm. So when we talk to Converge and try to assess our needs, when we figured out that when we figured out what we needed as a family, they were really able to help us, you know, talk to missionaries and figure out, you know, what are living expenses like, what has worked. They've been doing this for decades as well, and so really good just to rest on their experience and know that God has given us the work to do. Converge has helped us, you know, assess our needs, and that we just know we can trust in God to supply those. Mm-hmm. So that is what our budget looks like. And just to kind of clarify, that's what we're looking at a monthly support level. And So that is once we reach that monthly support level, we reach 100% of that, that is when we're able to go over. Mm-hmm. So right now, as we receive contributions and partners come on board, it goes into our startup fund. And then once we, and that's everything from, you know, housing to a vehicle when we get there and all that. Mm-hmm. And then once we get to 100%, like I said, that's when we're able to go over. Mm-hmm. Good question.
35%.
We're at 35%. Yeah. So our, it's just interesting. Look at the timing. We got ready to do ministry partnership development in March of last year. So before everything happened. They're not really a great time. So then we got going back in the summer, and then we took a break when our third daughter came. And so needless to say, this summer has been really exciting to really kind of gain some traction here as we all kind of, you know, feel things opening up. So
yeah,
35% is what we're at.
So we want to kind of close our presentation part with this verse from Revelation 7, verses 9 and 10. And it says, "After this I looked, and behold, a great multitude that no one could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes with palm branches in their hands, and crying out with a loud voice, 'Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb.'" And that is our biggest why, that Jesus is worthy of our worship. He's worthy of our lives. And we know that there are going to be Thai people standing before the throne with us someday. And we are blessed and honored to be a part of that. And just inviting other people to be a part of that with us has been a huge blessing as well. So thank you for listening. And if you have any questions, you can ask them.
I know you said 10, 15.
Two minute question.
There we go, yeah.
Sure. And you might hear some repeat information during church, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in Bangkok, we were there for 3 months in the summer? 2 months?
Two months.
And then I went back when our second daughter was born and took her with me and was there for a month. And then
teaching
English again at a school that needed some extra people. And then we went back last January for about 10 to 14 days just to view the area and meet people.
Vision trip.
In the northern part, because we had never been to the northern part before. Yeah. Oh, students here. Mm. It would really... So we have to do an initial 2 years of language learning before we start ministry. And so I think once we're in Udon Thani, I'm sure there will be some logistical things to figure out with the university, because we'll be working directly with them. And I don't know how long a process takes to like start up a study abroad program, but I mean, hopefully as soon as possible. It would be really cool. Even the town that I'm from, Forest City, Iowa, they have a lot of study abroad students and foreign exchange students living in people's homes, even from our church. And it's cool to see, like, there have been at least two of those foreign exchange students who have given their lives to Christ while they've been living in the homes. And so I personally, I've seen like the impact of that. So it's exciting.